Ciao, here is a conversation with Eric Van Winkle. Eric is the operations lead at BSI Labs, a company headquartered in Switzerland focused on building the infrastructure to spark the next scientific enlightenment. It's a company focused on the use of IPFS and blockchain technology to change the way in which we store, collect, and share scientific information, scientific works. Data, codes, and everything associated to it. So we start talking about what BSI is and what's his role in the company. And then we move into the discussion about the ethics of science, what a scientist should do, and what's the optimal behavior of an individual scientist, and therefore what are the incentives to make this behavior come naturally, let's say, more naturally. We talk about the tension between the need to share information for reproducibility and to maintain advantage let's say, free market environment. We also talk about the differences and similarities between decentralized science and open science, open source software, open access movement in general. From there we actually digress into the story of BSI, how BSI came to be. Why is it associated particularly with the Ethereum environment in the Web3 ecosystem, let's say? And then we talk about implementation choices, so why go for a layer 2 solution? Why not outside Ethereum, as just said? And so then we close about how to deal with fake news, how to distinguish, of course, when we're talking about fake news, or is it something revolutionary. So we start talking about the difficulty of defining what fake is, what true is, and how to define a paradigm that enables truth to emerge, and things related to this. Also we talk about, which was an interesting part, about how one should approach traditional gatekeepers. And that was an important, for me at least, important point of the conversation. So thanks a lot. I hope you enjoy it, and I look forward to participating more and more into the BSI movement. So thanks a lot for the opportunity to talk with you. I really like to keep things informal here, so feel free to say whatever pops to your mind, but the general framework for me is criticizing peer review here and seeing if we can do better, if it's a political issue or if it's a technological issue, and if the history of the SAI from open access, maybe, if you, I don't know what's your perspective, and then from there, why decentralization? Why blockchain plays a role? What's the role of technology in this process we're going through? And what individuals can do as scientists? What peer reviewers can do? What institutions like academia can do in this transformation that's happening? What that we are trying to make happen? That's kind of the big picture of this conversation.
Sure, sounds good. I'm gonna give a quick intro. So my name is Eric Van Winkle. I am the head of operations for DSI Labs. And anyone who wants to go learn more about us, we are DSI Labs on YouTube, DSI Labs on Twitter, and our website is DSI.com, and that's DESCI. Hopefully, we'll get the links posted at the bottom of this article, so anyone who can come in and wants to learn more has the ability to. So, I am not a scientist by trade. I wanted to be one. I got my mechanical engineering degree from Georgia Tech and was planning on going to get a doctorate, but pretty quickly figured out from some friends who were in doctoral programs that you didn't spend the majority of your time actually performing science. That the beautiful dream of being a scientist is, to a certain extent, bogged down with bureaucracy and not exactly what it's pitched as. So I had a couple friends who recommended that I not go pursue a PhD and instead go into industry. I ran a startup for a little while, went into emerging technology consulting at one of the major consulting firms, and eventually found my way back to DeSci, where I was lucky enough to get picked up by the DeSci Labs team and to have the opportunity to work on an incredible project at the intersection of meta-science and emerging technology, which, if we're being honest, it's kind of a dream job. Really nice to be able to work on cool, amazing technology with a purpose in mind. So that's a little bit more about me. Do you have any specific questions for me, Matteo?
Yeah. The starting point for me is, I don't want to get stuck into the individual responsibility pitfall, but I would like to start from there. So I'm really trying to, let's say, as Aaron Schwartz would have said it, in the spirit of civil disobedience, which is not civil disobedience here, we're trying just to define new protocols, new ethics of doing science. So I would like to learn more about how a scientist should behave in the ecosystem you're building in a way that's in accordance with your philosophy, I would say. Yeah, your ethics.
Sure, absolutely. I would say to start out with, the Hippocratic Oath is always going to be crucial and will be foundational for science. We would want anyone who comes into our ecosystem to be respectful of others, to be respectful of the scientific method, and to be respectful of the process of innovation and discovery. And that goes into a lot of different avenues. I can rabbit hole on that for a while, but to one of the earlier things you mentioned, it plays in very closely with a lot of the ideals of open science. You look at what the world has been able to do through COVID research. The planet faced existential threats coming from disease, and thanks to the principles of open science, was able to solve those threats in record time. We got a vaccine pushed out in no time because data and information was consistently shared across people and institutions and research groups. So to me, I guess part of what's so important there is the respect for the scientific process and for others in the field actually doing science. By sharing your data, you are showing a larger appreciation of the scientific community and an understanding that we are facing not just difficult problems, but inherently complex problems, which will always take networks to solve. Mm-hmm. We're no longer facing problems that an individual can solve on their own. So I would say to come in with respect is probably how I would hope that a scientist would behave, and not just respect for others, but respect for science.
Mm-hmm. Great. And can you say more about, so I mentioned ethics, but I was thinking about actual, so you said, you mentioned data sharing. So for me, the process has been, let's start, put down works. Let's make the PDF of the paper open access. Let's share the code that produced such results, and let's share the data that allowed the construction of such and such models. But can we do more? So I guess, what's the difference between decentralized science and open access and the open access movement? So what are you aiming at, and what should a scientist do in order to get aligned with your goals?
Gotcha, understood. I think that there is more that we can do to share data. And a lot of that is in designing the system itself that mm-hmm. data is shared through. So one of the things that we're working on, I guess kind of the end goal of this whole project, in my opinion, is a scientific ledger of record published on blockchain.
Yes.
I know that there's a lot of skepticism around blockchain technology. And I'll be the first to say blockchain has kind of earned that reputation. That being said, it is incredible technology with some real power behind it. So what we would like to make is a scientific ledger of record, where pieces of scientific knowledge, where different discoveries and the artifacts and components that led into them are published in a decentralized manner where no one individual can control that specific piece of research. It is published permanently and immutably on chain. I think that that is going to be one of the absolute keys and is to a certain extent what kind of separates decentralized science from open science. Right. There is a lot of overlap between the principles of open science and decentralized science. I would say the main difference is trying to make sure that we have tamper-proof ledgers of scientific record.
Right.
Another thing that I think we do have to consider is some of the business models behind science. So the way that publishers have structured themselves at the moment is detrimental towards human progress. That being said, to make a sustainable system in the world that we live in, money does still have to flow. Charitable nonprofit organizations are incredible, but for something at the scale of science, there has to be enough money flowing through the system for people to pay their rent. So thinking through a lot of the business model questions and kind of taking a lot of learnings that have come from open science and applying them to new systems with advanced technology is going to be a huge part of anything that makes decentralized science successful or not.
Right.
Then I guess the last portion of your question was, how does a scientist get involved? Right now, we're still at early stages. So we do have a demo that I'll make sure gets posted underneath the YouTube video. And thank you, Mateo. We are building that out right now and actually releasing it to alpha testers, I think tomorrow or the next day. At some point this week, we'll have people on the system putting PDFs up, storing files on IPFS, creating annotations in a way that's similar to Fermat's library. So we could use a lot of help. First off, testing out this first initial product, DeciNodes, which is an on-chain research object. So it's a wrapper around a variety of components. If you wrote a paper, likely it took years of your life to actually create said paper, and it's not just a 12-page PDF.
Mm-hmm.
There was data, there was code, there were PowerPoint slides, there were videos, there was so much else that went into this. So we've created an on-chain metadata structure that allows this information to be organized and queryable. Having people come in and use this system, helping us test it out, helping us find the bugs, is going to be very important. And then for science is complex. Science is very complicated. And in some of the subsequent products that we design, which will be more focused on human networks than technological networks, we're going to need help thinking through a lot of the considerations that come into play in any of these given systems. So having people on our Discord, helping us answer some of the questions around mechanism design for human networks is going to be absolutely crucial as well. My team is, I'm lucky to be on the team that I am. They're brilliant people. Philip, our chief science officer, was a tenured professor in Amsterdam and Wisconsin. Chris got his PhD as well. Sina, I swear he speaks computer. It's, if he could talk in X and zeros, he would. But even then, we still need many, many voices to help make this possible. So coming and contributing thoughts is another great way to help. Does that answer the question?
Yeah, definitely, yes. But there's so much more opening up for me because, I mean, I myself, my history is that I dropped out of a PhD, but I'm stucking around academia as much as I can, and I'm trying to do research. Before all this, let's say, some technical questions. No. Actually, before that, a question about, let's say, the history of the site. So from my perspective, it's happening everything super quickly, in the last couple of years, and there's been in this year the conference in Amsterdam, and then quickly after that one in Germany, I guess.
Yes.
So can you maybe give us a chronological, what's going on? How many things are there which are compatible with the thing you're doing? I saw something about, which sounded interesting to me, about the combination of IPFS and Git for decentralized software development. So yeah, what's the perspective, let's say, in space? Let me use the word space. So other things happening and how they can interact with each other, and maybe also chronologically. So when this, what happened that led us to what's going on now?
Absolutely. The current system of publishing has been problematic for quite a while. Mm-hmm. There is, I'm sure you're aware, has been a lot of pent-up negative energy around the systems of academia that has kind of manifested itself on Twitter for large periods of time. In, I guess it was February of this past year, mm-hmm. There was a conference in Denver, Colorado. East Denver, which kind of served as the kickoff for the space. At the time, I think we maybe had 50 people in the room. By Amsterdam, we were 500 strong. And at this point, I think the main Telegram group is over 1,000. If not, it's probably coming close. I can't keep track of the number of people who come on anymore. But the space has grown exponentially over the past few months, because people started to see that blockchain technologies offer an incredible alternative to a lot of the existing publishing systems. And it's part of what I come back to with the whole ledger of record concept that I mentioned earlier. Yeah. There are some brilliant minds in the space. So I've been looking at jumping to Web3 for quite a while from the previous consulting job. And what ended up selling me on the jump over to Web3 was getting to talk to people in Denver and realizing that these were some of the smartest human beings I had ever met in my life, and they were all centered in one conference room together. There are some incredible projects coming out. I tend to focus more on the meta science side of decentralized science, so how do we remake the systems of science?
Right.
That being said, there are plenty of other projects out there who do decentralized biotech, decentralized wet labs, quite a few other concepts. But some of the groups that I work with very closely are OpSci, who's doing their first product is Holonym, which is a decentralized identity solution.
Right.
And Surf, who is a nonprofit focusing on human networks for Web3 research. And a lot of these different groups are coming together to form a cohesive ecosystem with different projects working in parallel to build out base infrastructure components of a technology stack that scientific research can be built and securely stored on top of. Does that answer the question?
Yeah, definitely. And so you mentioned the so I think the point about the identity resonates with me with thinking about the paper from Vitalik about the concept of soul. Is that related?
Yeah, absolutely. Vitalik, actually Pooja, the main author on that paper, uh-huh. is very involved in the decentralized science space. Mm-hmm. And I think it plays in. So one of the things that Web3, crypto as a whole, really needs is a legitimacy use case. I mentioned it earlier, Web3 has some reputation problems. It's doggy coins and monkey pictures and wild speculation on the internet. And I understand that. And I understand the ridiculousness behind it. Yeah. We as a community need a couple stable use cases that showcase the power of this technology at scale in a way that isn't wildly speculative and detrimental to consumers, all that kind of stuff. a lot of leaders in the Web3 space have started to realize that decentralized science can be one of those very powerful use cases. And that's part of why Pooja has decided to actually come on to DeSci and help present at a lot of our conferences, come to our journal clubs. So if you want to hear her speak and actually get the chance to ask her questions, we periodically will have her on journal clubs for the DeSci community. Actually, our CEO, Chris, presented, it was really funny. We were in a journal club and Chris was presenting on Pooja's paper and Pooja shows up in the audience to provide context and commentary. So that was actually pretty hilarious in my opinion. But yes, to go back to the original question, yes, it plays in a huge way. And identity is tricky, right? Identity can be positive, reputation can be positive, but reputation can also be negative. And in the paper that Vitalik published, one of the things that was on there was the concept of negative reputation. Mm-hmm. So how do you track the fact that someone has done something wrong? And the answer that he came up with sparked a lot of controversy in Web3. It was a brilliant paper that so many people have read and so many people have appreciated. So for anyone listening that doesn't understand the paper, it's the concept of using NFTs as a way to transfer reputation. So soulbound tokens can basically be used to say, hey, you were at this point in time, you did this, and it's all been published on chain to the point where anyone can look up your reputation. Now, from the standpoint of technology, that's very powerful. From the standpoint of privacy, it's also very problematic. So using zero knowledge proofs in that system is going to be a huge part of it. But yeah, I feel like I'm kind of rambling at this point. To sum it all up, there are other folks in the space who are probably way more qualified to answer this question than I am. Really interesting concept, something we're using, something we're collaborating with the original creators of the idea on to make sure it works in decentralized science.
Right. Okay. And the fact that, so you mentioned the Ethereum conference in Denver. I'm also talking about a previous work by Vitalik, a flexible design for funding public goods, that it's kind of resonating with all this philosophy. So my question is at this point, the blockchain DeSci Labs is building on is the Ethereum one. And if so, is it more of an alignment of interest with the people of Ethereum, or is it more the technology coming out of the Ethereum blockchain is necessary to do DeSci?
You know, I think it's both. I don't think that it's possible to completely separate the technological networks and the human networks. Ultimately, a part of what you need is for science to be viewed as the public good. Because quite frankly, science is the textbook example of a public good, and is the greatest public good that humanity has ever created. To me, Ethereum is the clear choice for hosting decentralized science, because there is no other blockchain with the same level of security and scalability. Most projects that I've seen are building on Ethereum, I've seen a couple others here and there who are trying different chains, which I strongly encourage as well. It's never a bad idea to have additional concepts coming out using other technologies. But to me, Ethereum is the place to be. Mm-hmm. It's also very powerful to have the Ethereum community. So it is by far the largest community in Web3. And one of the things that Ethereum and the Ethereum Foundation do regularly is host conferences. So I think over 12 months, they probably have 30 different conferences all around the world, and an army of people behind the scenes helping to organize and put these on. It serves as a shelling point for people to come together and to discuss, to, you know, form bonds and develop camaraderie. And to me, that is incredibly important. So I appreciate the Ethereum Foundation, not only for the technology that they built, but also for the human networks that they've stacked on top of it.
Nice. And the technological technology-wise, you're working with layer one, so Ethereum itself, right?
So in the interest of cost, we are using Optimism as a rollup.
Okay. Okay.
It's Ethereum is just too expensive to use on its own.
Right, right. Okay. And how is IPFS integrated into this framework? So could you explain technically how does the design node work?
Sure. So we are using Ethereum and Optimism to create a scientific ledger of record. That being said, storing documents on Ethereum is wildly cost prohibitive. So we're using Ethereum to store decentralized acyclic graphs, DAGs, which function as pointers and metadata for actual content that's being stored on IPFS. And for anyone who doesn't know what IPFS is, it's essentially the base storage protocol for crypto that most decentralized storage groups, your Arweaves, your Filecoins, your Sias, actually run on top of. We're working with Filecoin and their storage network. Their research arm, Protocol Labs, is the people who created IPFS in the first place. They have been staunch supporters of DeSci through and through, have helped to fund pretty much every major conference that have been put on. They kind of help us out with some of the technological resources. They help us vet ideas, just all around phenomenal people. And we're very lucky to have them on our side. We store the majority of components on IPFS, and then we have indexes and pointers to them on chain.
Mm-hmm. Right. And my natural question at this point is, how do you treat, and maybe this is also related to the technology of the centralized social media in general. Let's say fake news. So someone states something that's false in a scientific framework. I mean, I've encountered many times, peer-reviewed papers on journals with mistakes, patent mistakes. How could DeSci deal with this? So does DeSci reply to the issue of the imperfection of peer reviewers? Or is there an open, how can I avoid the spread of fake news and of wrong science? How can you do it?
it's a hell of a question. For starters, it is a philosophical question of what is fake news. But in the realm of science, where you can start to quantify things as true or false with a greater level of accuracy, we have started to, or actually at the foundation of our nodes product, we've tried to build replication in. So our chief science officer, Philip Kohlinger, was a professor of, I believe it was economical genomics, I think was his field. He can probably tell this story a lot better than I can, but he started off his career by getting involved with a paper that basically said, hey, this one specific gene causes this one specific trait. It was breast cancer. Mm-hmm. I think it's the BRA2 studies. This was back in the early 2000s, and the study itself was based off of 10,000 respondents. So he did not believe this study. He did not think that it would replicate, and ended up getting a consortium together of about 300 different people who pulled relevant data points across different institutions and data repositories, and in the early 2000s was able to get a study of 300,000 data points, which as of now, that doesn't seem like a lot, but back at the time, that was a number that just you didn't reach. Mm-hmm. So he led this consortium. They ended up rerunning a lot of the studies that came from this BRA2 paper. And what they found was, yes, there's a minor correlation between this gene and breast cancer.
Right.
But no, it is not a major correlation. It's not to say that if you have this gene, you're going to get breast cancer. It's to say that if you have this gene, you're 0.2% more likely to have breast cancer. And in doing that was actually working to debunk the larger myth of a lot of the was working to debunk the replication crisis. So as he started building our system, as he was thinking through a lot of the technological concepts, he wanted to keep replication at the very center of everything that we're doing. So one of the things that we have enabled on the Nodes platform is a badging system, which is focused around open science and replication. So if you publish a node, you get a badge for having published your data alongside.
Right.
You get a badge if the artifacts that you actually published are functional. So I can click the link and the link actually opens.
Mm-hmm.
You get another badge if those artifacts are reusable. You can get a fourth badge if it's peer reviewed, a fifth badge if it's replicated, so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
But building in badges as components to the node so that the badges themselves are just as central as the PowerPoint presentations that went alongside the PDF is a huge step towards making better and more reproducible science. That's going to be a huge part. Another thing that's been very interesting, so this is some of the work that I'm doing with the smart contract research forum, is the peer review experimentation that's happening in Web3. So I'm lucky enough to be a part of the smart contract research forum as well. It is smartcontractresearch.org for anyone who wants to go see. Eugene, the guy who's currently leading it right now, has kicked off a series of peer review experiments using Web3 technology. So thinking about how do we use a concept like a prediction market in the concept of peer review? How does making peer review completely open and transparent affect the actual process of peer review?
Mm-hmm.
How does paying someone $500 to do a peer review affect the results that come out of it? And it's not to say that his study will come up with all the answers, but more to say that people in Web3 are actively thinking about the concept of better peer review and are experimenting on it in low latency, low friction environments.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, I would say it's the badging system that we're putting in place that acts as a base check for reproducible research as opposed to just sensational research.
Yeah.
And then it's constant experimentation with new technologies with the intention of creating a modular stack for peer review design that anyone can fork at their leisure because it's all open source.
Yes.
Does that answer the question?
Yeah, definitely. And also, resonates personally again, because on the one hand, there's the reproducibility crisis, but then I think this could also answer to the opposite, which is reinventing the wheel. Because it becomes so evident that things are out there that it's like, I don't know, I feel the power of this in on the one hand freeing up energies that are now used to compete. Now there's, I think, I don't know if you share this view, there's the need to compete, and to do this you have to pretend you're doing something slightly different, even though 90% is shared, but you cannot, there's no incentive to, at least economically, to do the first part together, share the code, share everything, and then compete. I think this AI could also remove the need to pretend that everything is original, and then all the energies can actually be spent at the forefront of things that need to be done and problems that need to be solved. I don't know, it's more of a comment. I'd like to have your view on this.
No, absolutely. I completely agree. It's so by making open science the default, as opposed to an option that someone can pick, you make it so that it's not a question of whether you share your code and data, it's an expectation. And using reproducible principles as the foundation for the acceptance of a node, as opposed to its author's prestige, is a significantly better way to make sure that we are sharing information. So as you look at a badge, if you go into a node at the very beginning and you see, okay, there are 10 badges for this one specific node, or 5 badges, whatever it is. We currently have 5, but may expand later. Mm-hmm. And only 2 of them have been achieved. Only 1 of them has been achieved. 0 of them have been achieved. I'm going to approach this paper with a sense of skepticism.
Right.
You are incentivizing authors to create reproducible research by making sure that the basis of evaluation for a paper is whether or not it's quality science, whether or not it reproduces, not whether or not it's sensational and it's going to get likes and links and citations and whatnot. So I can definitely see that being a huge part of it. And then I also think that the collaboration aspect of DeSci is going to be important. And there are 1,015,000 mechanisms that are going to come into play with that. So once again, to anyone who wants to come join the discussion, helping to make the system, please come be active on our Discord. We really appreciate the feedback from any and all contributors with experience in the space. We do read the messages. We do take it into consideration for system design. And we would appreciate the expertise of anyone who wants to come contribute.
Great. Yeah, I feel guilty. I mean, I scheduled the interview because I was so eager to talk with you. But I have so many things to get back on track with. I just looked half an hour of the Amsterdam conference, and I didn't study enough the Discord. So I guess I have to stop wasting your time, and I need to get back to study and start to properly contribute. That's the feeling I have now. But yeah, definitely, this was more of a way for me to share with my small, how do you say, community. The fact that DeSci exists, and the goals you're trying to achieve, which are really, I love it. I can't say differently. One last question is, what's the role of the whole world? Let me phrase it like this. So is it like Eric Weinstein stated at the Lex Fridman podcast, talking about Arnold Schwartz? Do we have to say fuck JSTOR, fuck Springer, fuck Elsevier? Or, and I would say related to this, fuck institutionalized research? Let's decentralize science both as a protocol and as a lifestyle, I don't know how to say it. Or do we have to do something different? Like, do we have to change existing systems, existing protocols, but maintaining them? I don't know. Do you see what I'm
saying? I do. Probably not the answer you're looking for on this one, but I tend to go on the second side.
Right.
And I forget the name of the story, but heard one the other day where someone comes into a yard and they see this beautiful home with all of these, you know, fruits and plants and everything, and there's a big fence around the home. And their initial inclination is, hey, let's come tear down this fence.
Right.
But they probably don't stop and think about why the fence is there in the first place, what the fence was put up for, what the reasoning for the existing processes in the current system are. I think that the business model of large journals is a draw on the resources, the most brilliant resources of humanity. I think that there are some strong problems with it. But I think what's more useful is to recognize the experience that some of these journals have, to recognize the impact that they've had over the past 50 years, because yes, there are problems in the system of science, there are problems in any system, but we are moving at a faster scientific pace now than what we ever have in the history of humanity. And like it or not, part of that is from the journals themselves. I think what's more powerful is accepting that they also do care about science, that they have been trapped in a business model that is negative, detrimental, and unsustainable, and helping them work to a place that can be more sustainable, helping them work towards open science. Because I like to believe that most of the people working in journals are doing so because they believe in a brighter future. They just don't know how to get there. So to me, it's a question of collaboration, not competition or destruction.
Yeah.
How do we work with them to help build a brighter future?
Yeah, I guess this was the answer I was looking for in some sense, because it's a bit, maybe it's, how do you say, liberatory to say, yeah, this system is imperfect. Let it die. And yeah, you're not responsible for it anymore. And so you can just destroy it. Yeah, it's easy to destroy complex things, but it's much better to understand them, to understand what's the alternative, and to change what's existing accordingly. So I guess I needed to hear this from someone else.
No, it's I mean, it's a hard thing to think about, and it's not, you're right, it's liberating to say, yeah, the old system is terrible, let's tear it down from the roots and build it up anew, we're going to do way better. But realistically, the system has morphed into what it is today, and a lot of the longer term effects that probably weren't apparent at the beginning are things that we can learn from at the beginning of a new system. I see them going in parallel. If it's at all possible, I would love to include them in the system in a way where they can pursue goals of open science with the proper direction, the proper business model. Another part of this is kind of recognizing some of the faults of open science. I think a lot of the principles of open science are incredible. We've seen the power of it through COVID itself and how fast we were able to make a vaccine, but not having a proper business model is wildly detrimental. It creates systems that are unsustainable and creates unforeseen problems that you probably didn't expect at the beginning. So I think it's a question of trying to use the experiences of both journals and of both for-profit and non-profit journals to, I know that's the wording, please excuse me, I'm not a scientist, but to try and use the existing business models and experience of all kinds of journals to try and build a better system with a sustainable business model.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, thank you very much. Really, I really needed to hear some of the things you said. I hope the audience of this interview as well. As you said, we'll share all the links in the description. So I hope more people will join. I will definitely be more active on Discord. And the Telegram chat you mentioned, is it the Blockchain for Science group?
Yes, it is.
Okay, so I'll maybe link that as well. And yeah.
I think I promised the DeSci Labs Discord, DeSci Labs website, the Blockchain for Science Telegram, and then maybe the link to the smart contract research forum, people can come in and participate with the peer review experiment. And if there's anything else, I promise, I guess comments on the YouTube video and I'll work on getting it to you.
Yeah, great. Okay, perfect. Yeah, Eric, it was a pleasure. Thank you very much for this conversation.
It was a pleasure, Matteo. Have a wonderful day.